Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Willow Pod. I'm Skye, back here today with Jonathan from the Family Law Group. Hi, Jonathan.
Good morning, Skye. You're right.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for coming along and being on our podcast this morning. It's always great to have new faces on here.
No problem. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. So could you possibly tell us a little bit about what you do at the Family Law Group?
Yeah, so we are a firm of family solicitors. So we deal with all aspects of family law, from the private stuff involving divorce, finance matters, disputes between parents over their children, up to the public law stuff, which involves care proceedings and children going into care. We also deal with domestic abuse injunctions.
Okay, very interesting then, very interesting. I've got quite a few questions that I would like to ask you. It's a very interesting topic. One of the first questions that I can think of is, so when you think of a stalker, is this usually someone you know, or is it usually a stranger, or can it be either?
Yes, I think with stalkers, there's probably two separate categories to them. You get kind of the celebrity type stalker who wouldn't know someone directly, but then becomes obsessed and starts exhibiting that stalking behaviour. But generally, and certainly in my line of work, a stalker is someone who's known by the victim. It can be an ex-partner, it could be a friend, it could be husband or wife. So yeah, it could be anyone. I think that there was a very sad instance last year in the Chesterfield area.
Yes.
Where a young girl called Gracie Spinks was stalked and ended up being murdered by a chap who she'd known from work. So it can be a fairly loose relationship where people don't know each other very well, but there tends to be a link somewhere, yeah.
Okay, and what would you say are maybe the first signs that someone could look out for that they might be being stalked by somebody?
Yes, I think it tends to be quite obsessive behaviour, and that could be a variety. Certainly in the modern world, it could be a variety of things. So I think in the olden days, stalking was seen as something where someone was being followed and someone would turn up at their home address or at their workplace, whereas now it can be all done via social media, via messages, via telephone calls. There are all sorts of ways to do it. But if there's someone who's always behaving in a way towards you that you find uncomfortable, it's worth stopping and thinking very carefully about what's happening and whether you need some kind of support.
What would you say the difference is between stalking and harassment?
Yes, I think they're very similar. Harassment is when there's a pattern of behaviour from one person to another, which makes that person feel scared, distressed or threatened in some way. Mm-hmm. And that behaviour, like I said before, can be a wide variety of things, whether it is actually turning up at someone's property or whether it's cyberbullying or whether it's unwanted or abusive calls, text messages, that kind of thing. And stalking encompasses all of that. But on mm-hmm. top of that, there tends to be an aggressive or a persistent or obsessive element to it.
Yeah.
And there's some helpful guidance from the police around this, where they refer to the four warning signs, which mm-hmm. is where the behaviour is fixated, obsessive, unwanted and repeated. And I think that's really where the stalking differs from the harassment.
Yeah. So at what point does it, because I know there's probably quite a fine line between someone just being persistent in perhaps, I guess, nowadays with mobile phones and social media and things, when does it become harassment as opposed to not being harassment?
Yeah, I think it's really down to the impact that it has on the individual. So if someone is being made to feel upset, distressed, threatened, scared by the communications they're getting or the behaviour that's being displayed to them, then that is harassment. And that's the point at which they need to really sort of take some form of action.
Because I actually know of somebody who recently split up with an ex-partner and they had constant messages and things from their ex-partner, and they'd like blocked them on all platforms and they kept finding a new platform, and then it got to the point where they were emailing them. Would that be then seen as harassment? Because I know it's hard for people who don't specialise in it or don't know so much about it to know if it is that, or if it's just, I'm not sure if that other person thinks that it's acceptable for someone to be like that with them.
So I think again, it probably comes down to how your friend's feeling, how that's making her or him feel. I think you point out some really, really good points there. So people should take appropriate action to safeguard themselves. So, you know, blocking numbers on the telephone, blocking people from social media is absolutely the right thing to do. You know, if it continues beyond that, and it's making someone feel uncomfortable, then it most likely is harassment. And that's a stage where someone needs to think, well, you know, speak to friends, speak to family, make sure, you know, people know about it and can perhaps offer some support in that way. But also, you know, speak to the police, call the police and say, look, this is the behaviour that's happening. And there are certain steps that the police can take. So I think that's the way to approach it, or even speak to a family lawyer who can send out a warning letter to someone who's behaving like that to put them on notice that their behaviour is a form of harassment. You know, it may be that the other person doesn't understand, you know,
that their behaviour is
going over the line. Yeah, so there are sensible, practical steps to take, and if they don't work, then there are sort of more legal routes to look down.
So is it ever quite common then for someone who might be, I guess this is probably hard to track though, someone who may be stalked or harassed that perhaps they don't want to do anything about it because they just want to sort of forget about it. Does that cause a problem down the line if someone does decide to do that rather than get help?
Yeah, I think that's very common, actually. So there might be all sorts of reasons why someone doesn't want to take any action. It might be, like you say, to try and forget about what's happened. It might be because there are children involved and they don't want to get the other parent into any kind of trouble. It might be that they think it will just die down over time and so they don't want to make a big deal of it. Whether that causes an issue down the line, I think depends on kind of what steps they've taken to safeguard themselves and to keep evidence of what's been happening. So, you know, if there is a string of text messages or string of social media messages, it's a good idea to keep hold of those so that if something comes up later on, then they could take some action. But if the behaviour continues and someone, instead of at the beginning taking some action, waits 3-4 months and then says, well, this is enough, that's fine. You know, people understand that sometimes it takes time to recognise the behaviour.
Yes, yeah.
And then it can take time to have the guts to go and do something about it. So it doesn't have to impact it. But if someone was being harassed a year ago and then went to the police and said, can we do something about this, and nothing else has happened, it's unlikely anything can happen at that stage. Yeah.
In fact, one of the questions I was going to ask you is what information you should keep hold of or keep note of. I guess that's the benefit of, with nowadays having mobile phones that are so high tech, where you can save everything. So it's worthwhile saving all of those things then.
Yes, absolutely it is. And certainly when I look at it from a sort of family law point of view, if we were going for an injunction, to be able to provide the court with some physical evidence of the behaviour. Mm-hmm. is going to assist immeasurably. But yes, absolutely, you should keep those kind of things. The other thing that could be helpful would just be to keep a brief diary of what's happening. Because, I mean, these things can be very distressing. And I think the first point is that people don't always recognise what behaviour is happening until much further down the line. But I think once that behaviour has been recognised, if there's a brief record of it, a brief diary that's kept to say, this is what's happened on this day and the next day and so on, I think that's helpful, because when you come to say, if the behaviour continues and you have to go to court, you have to do statements, you have to recall what's happened, and that can be very difficult when you're going through distressing times. So if there's a sort of log, a brief log, where you can say, well, actually, this is what's happened on these dates, that's very helpful. But yeah, the text messages, the social media event, depending on what situation people are in, some people have CCTV at home, some people, you know, to keep hold of that kind of thing is very helpful.
Okay. So how would somebody go about speaking to someone like yourself or getting help then if they did feel like they were being stalked or harassed and they wanted to get that help?
Yes, I think that the first step people have got to take is to speak to the police.
Okay.
After they've done the practical steps to safeguard themselves, then speak to the police, because, you know, these are criminal offences and there are steps that the police can take. So the police can put in place something called a domestic violence protection notice, which I think lasts about 48 hours, during which time the police can put in place a domestic violence protection order.
Yeah.
And those are used where there's not enough evidence to charge someone, so you can't put in place safeguarding like bail conditions, but you know there's sufficient distress for the police to take the action. Yeah. And that then protects someone for 28 days, during which time they can then perhaps go and seek advice from a family lawyer. The police don't always do that. So if the police were to say, you know, to someone, look, there's nothing that we can do in this situation, that's the point at which someone probably wants to speak to a family lawyer to understand what steps can be taken to safeguard them. And I think, you know, to access that, you've got Google and all the other things to look up local solicitors. Yeah.
So when would you see it right for someone to go about getting a restraining order?
Yeah, so a restraining order is an order that's put in place during criminal proceedings. Okay, yeah. So that will be done if someone's convicted of a domestic abuse offence. A restraining order would be put in place through any criminal proceedings. Someone would be subject to bail conditions, so that would protect someone. So those types of orders are dealt with in a criminal court. If the police aren't able to go down that route, but there is harassment going on, then the police are likely to say, you need to go and get some civil advice on this.
Yeah.
It's a civil matter between you and your ex-partner or whoever it is. And at that point, they would go and seek family advice to talk about what kind of injunctions can be put in place. Okay. And so when we look at it from a legal point of view, we would want to understand, you know, what is the nature of this behaviour, how long it's been going on for, you know, what's the most serious instance that's happened, what's the most recent instance that's happened, and then advice can be given on that as to the next course of action.
Okay.
And there are sort of different things that can be done. So I referred, I think, earlier to a warning letter. So if it's not seen as an urgent matter and correspondence might be able to deal with it, a warning letter could be sent out to someone that will simply say, look, your behaviour is unacceptable. If that continues, the next step is for us to go to court without any further notice to you. And that can be quite effective in a lot of circumstances.
Okay.
If the behaviour is sort of at a higher level and there are concerns about the safety for someone, then an application can be made to the court for a non-molestation order. And that can be done on an urgent basis. It can be done on a without notice basis, depending on the circumstances of the case. Those orders put in place protection for someone, and can be for their children as well, to prevent someone from harassing, molesting, pestering the other person. It can stop someone from even contacting the other person. And these orders now include all this modern form of communication that you get on social media.
Yeah.
And it also, these orders can protect against someone doing it through a third party.
Right, okay.
So it covers all of that and can also include what's called an exclusion zone. So it can protect someone's home and prevent someone coming round there. So there's sort of a high level of protection that can be offered by the court in the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those orders can be put in place for up to 12 months at a time. They can be reapplied for if it's continuing. And a breach of that order is an arrestable offence and someone can be sent to prison for 5 years. So it's a good level of protection and people should always seek that initial advice to see if that's the appropriate course of action for them.
Okay, so is it seen that the warning is quite effective? Is it seen that often people don't have to take that much further than after the warning has been sent out then?
Yeah, absolutely. It depends on the level of behaviour. So the warning letter, it can be very, very effective. Because people don't want to go to court, people don't want to have orders made against them.
Yeah.
But, you know, in circumstances where there's a real concern for someone's personal safety, it might not be appropriate to send out, you know, any kind of correspondence warning the other person that this person's seeking legal advice. And of course, the other consideration is if someone's quite vulnerable and there's a concern that if the other person knows that they're seeking legal advice, they will try and persuade them to do something different or to not take any action, then it wouldn't be appropriate to send a warning letter. So it's all, you know, it's all very dependent on the circumstances people find themselves in. Yeah.
So it links quite closely then to domestic abuse. In I bet it's seen quite often that once a victim leaves a perpetrator, do they quite often get stalked or harassed by the perpetrator?
Yeah, so it links very closely with domestic abuse, and I would say the vast majority of these types of cases we're dealing with are partners or ex-partners, whether they can quite often be a level of harassment, because people can find the breakdown of relationships very difficult. Mm-hmm. And so you may have one party who doesn't accept that relationship's over or is finding that difficult and will continue to communicate regularly, which then distresses the other party and therefore becomes a form of harassment. It can go further than that, particularly if there's been a violent relationship. People have to flee that, find a place of safety, and may need protective orders around that situation to make sure they're not going to come to any harm.
So say my friend, the person who I knew, I mentioned earlier, say if I knew that they were being stalked or harassed and yet they didn't really want to do anything about it, is there anything that you can do as someone who knows that someone's being stalked or harassed to help them?
All you can do is keep encouraging them and signpost them to the support that's out there. Potentially could call the police. I'm not sure how much further that would go. Mm-hmm. But looking at it from the family law point of view, these type of applications can only be made by associated persons. So it has to be by the person who is suffering the harassment, and that person has to be sufficiently associated with the other person. So an ex-partner is fine, but you can't have a third party taking that action on their behalf.
Against them, so it has to be their decision. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And similar with a warning letter, we couldn't send a warning letter on behalf of a third party.
Of a third party, yes, because then I guess it's very similar to we talk about in our training, the Clare's Law.
Yes.
And one of those things is that you can ask on behalf of somebody else, but you could never find out yourself, because I guess somebody could just be trying to stir trouble. Perhaps that's why.
Yeah. Well, I think there are all sorts of different dynamics, aren't there?
Yeah.
And, it's always the case that, if a loved one or a friend is in these circumstances, you want to help, and that's absolutely natural, but it might be that they feel it's better not to do anything at this time, and they might be right, they may be wrong, time will tell. But there's all sorts of issues, I think, with having a third party do it on their behalf.
Yeah, seeing how closely it links to domestic abuse, actually, it makes me think that we should talk about it a lot more during our trainings. We run domestic abuse awareness training, and we briefly do touch on stalking and harassment, and it makes me think that we should probably add in quite a significant bit on it, because of how strong the link is between the two.
Well, that's right. I think it's talked about a lot more now. And people are a lot more aware of the issues. And I think, looking at the kind of stats through the COVID lockdown, there's been a significant spike in this kind of behaviour. And so, the more people know about it, the more people are aware of it, the more they can perhaps point it out to other people who can then go and get that advice and that support. Yeah.
Yes, because I imagine there's quite a lot of people out there who think that perhaps stalking is still that if you're being followed by somebody, they don't perhaps don't realise that it can be by modern technology and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. I think I was reading a BBC article yesterday where there is a court case going on in Nottingham to do with stalking. I think I don't know the ins and outs, but an ex-BBC employee who it's alleged has been stalking a number of presenters. And that is all via social media and emails and bits and pieces like that. So absolutely, it's not that physical action of following someone around and turning up where they're not wanted.
I was wondering if it's obvious to a perpetrator if the actions that they are doing are stalking or harassment. I'm wondering if that's something that's perhaps talked about enough. I'm not really sure.
It's not always obvious, I don't think, because there is almost a subjective element to this. So particularly when you think of a breakdown of a relationship, and if someone is sending a lot of messages, they may not feel that the content is bad, but it's the quantity that is upsetting the other person. They may well not know that their behaviour is unacceptable or a form of harassment. So you can certainly get instances where people aren't aware. And that's where the warning letter is very helpful, because it perhaps jogs their mind to think how it looks from the other side.
Yeah, Yeah, wow, that's given me some very interesting things to think about, and I shall definitely be going and talking to Emily. Well, in fact, I'll be getting her to listen back to the podcast
Okay.
and saying that we need to add quite a lot of bits into our training. So thank you very much for that. You really informed me on some things there, so thank you very much. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention at all that we've not covered?
No, I don't think, apart from obviously that Family Law Group are there and can help with these kind of issues. So yeah, we've got offices in Chesterfield and Derby in the Derbyshire area. So always available to help.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming along to the podcast, and we hope to speak to you again soon.
Lovely, thank you.
Thank you very much.